The golden era of Firing Line was really like 1966 for the first 15 years. And that's when Buckley had like Eldridge Cleaver on.
All the pigs would be extinct.
The mainstream wouldn't put radicals on television. It was the only place they could get any airtime. My absolute favorite is his introduction of Claire Booth Luce. He introduces her in a way that she determines is chauvinistic. And in her response to his first question, she completely undresses him.
In the entire introduction, there was only one masculine put down.
What you got from Buckley was that he really had a rapport and respect for his guests, even though he disagreed. So there was really a camaraderie and a collegiality and a respect for the ideas.
Few TV shows, especially few political shows, can compare to Firing Line, the talk show hosted for decades by William F. Buckley.
You're being evasive, and I don't think you want to be.
In its original incarnation, it ran for 33 years and over 1,500 episodes, and it featured guests ranging from Muhammad Ali to Ronald Reagan to Jack Kerouac to Milton Friedman to Mother Teresa.
Please tell Jesus to stop kissing me.
The show went off the air in 1999, but now it's back on PBS, and I'm pleased to sit down with the new host, Margaret Hoover.
I'm Margaret Hoover, and welcome to Firing Line.
Born in 1977, Hoover is the great-granddaughter of Herbert Hoover, a former contributor to Fox News and CNN, and the author of 2011's American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. Margaret, thanks for talking to Reason.
Thanks for having me.
What is it like to occupy the seat that William F. Buckley famously slouched on for 30-plus years?
I need to light my cigarette before I can answer that question.
Yeah, there was a lot of smoking.
There was a lot of smoking. There were pipes, there were cigars, there were, there's no Nicorette, though. Yeah. We can do Nicorette these days. The first thing I tell people is, like, I'm not trying to be Buckley, because I'm not. I'm not William F. Buckley. He had run for mayor by the time he launched Firing Line. In fact, it was his mayoral run. He was 40 years old. He ran for mayor in New York City, created the Conservative Party in New York, had written God and Man at Yale, and had founded a small conservative journal that nobody really read, at least at that point. So we're very different people. But what he did was create a tradition on television that was a rigorous contest of ideas. And that has gone missing. And so the goal is to bring that tradition back. Inspired by him, and to really respect that legacy. I'm somebody who comes by legacy honestly, and I appreciate that there are a lot of people who care deeply about the tradition and the legacy that William F. Buckley left behind. And I want to approach it with kid gloves because I understand that legacies are important.
What are the big ideas that you think need to be discussed that are, you know, that have kind of gone missing?
There are sort of big ideas like the challenge of the moment, I think, is sort of the ideas that define and need defending in the context of Western democracy and liberal democracy. I think there are
so that
policy
stuff like,
solutions.
Like, I mean, free speech and open society,
free speech
religious
and open society
freedom,
and free press and freedom of religion, sort of all the sort of the foundational pillars of, you know, the Bill of Rights. I think that there are just policy issues we need to talk about. Like, we have an opioid crisis in this country. Why do we have an opioid crisis? What are the problems that are perpetuating that? What are the systemic failures? Aside from sort of the ailings that we have societally, like, we have ailings in our government. You know, there's a real failure in Congress. I mean, I think there's a lot of sort of policy issues and sort of problems that we can tackle. They're cultural problems. You know, there's this sort of moment we have where we can, I think, sit back and reflect and unpack in a long format and exchange with people who are really experts in those areas, to sort of think through how we solve our problems. And the best part is we have this archival repository of 1,500 episodes where many of the same problems Buckley took on. And so in many cases, we'll use Firing Line clips in the show to demonstrate that the arguments are the same. They were the same 40 years ago and 30 years ago and 20 years ago, or in some cases, they're totally different.
You identify as a conservative, and Buckley, you know, at various points would use the adjective libertarian, but he was, you know, he created the modern conservative movement or was the kind of godfather of it. What do you see as the essential difference between conservatives and libertarians?
It seems to me that the modern American conservative movement's tenets, when Buckley formed sort of the initial cohesiveness, and then with the fusionism after Frank Meyer, right? There was this tenet of traditionalism, which wasn't really the white evangelical Southern Protestant tradition yet. I mean, that came later in the 80s, but when sort of at the formation in the 60s and the 70s. So there was this traditionalist component. It really stood against a secular state. So that's one element of conservatism, I think. But I think when it comes to sort of free market ideas and free market libertarianism, I think that was one of the other components of Buckley's philosophy. I think that's where you get a lot of common cause with libertarians. And then, you know, the other fundamental sort of denominator in the conservative movement was anti-communism at the beginning. And that the libertarians, as they emerged sort of later, didn't really need to take a strong stand
as that problem had resolved itself at that point.
So. Yeah. In 2011, the book that you wrote, or the book that you published, the subtitle was, it was a book about saving the Republican Party. You know, it's 7 years later.
I stand by every word I said, it's totally irrelevant.
What were you trying to save it from then? And then is it worth saving now? I mean,
so the title was, and I'll do this later because I always go down the Herbert Hoover bunny hole. But the title was American Individualism, which was a title of my great grandfather's first really concise articulation of his view of American exceptionalism and what made America great. The subtitle was...
You are tearing up just thinking about that, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm so transparent. I have no poker face. How a new generation of conservatives can save the Republican Party.
Right.
That was the subtitle. So the idea was there's a whole generation of millennials. So by the way, when I wrote the book, it was 2010. The first data was out on millennials. And by the way, they had also helped just recently elect Barack Obama. Really been a critical difference in his election. And so and I had just come out of the Bush White House, and I had seen, we were very, very polarized, and it was a very, very heated time to be a Republican.
And Bush left office with, at the time, record low.
Right, 23% approval rating. So the idea was, all right, we're not going to win this next generation unless we start making the case about our ideas. And by the way, we can't even lead with the R on the title, right? But we do need to start making the case for our ideas to this group. And so the idea was, you know, to the book-buying community of conservative book buyers, which is what this book was cast as, here's who the millennials are. And iceberg ahead, we need to try to figure out how to win, or else, as we know, in two or three presidential cycles, if a cohort votes for the same party multiple times, by the third time, they're never going to self-identify with that other party. They're just not. And so that it was intended to be a warning, a clarion call, a canary in the coal mine.
And instead it just sped it up.
The canary died. It is really overtaken by events. I mean, the Republican Party is irreparably damaged with the millennials.
But at the same time, the Republican Party holds, and you know, this may change in the fall, but I mean, it holds a record number of congressional seats and Senate seats and governorships.
Yeah, but our voters aren't young, and they're not women, and they're not minorities. Yeah. And they're not
are the ideas that the Republicans should be selling that would actually appeal to those groups?
Well, I do think equality of opportunity for all Americans, right? All the things I said. I'm just going to remake the arguments in my book, right? I do think we need to recognize that the country is getting more diverse, not less diverse. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we need to double down on either isolationism or sort of the old world. The millennial generation is 40% non-white.
And is it with the Republicans, is it as much? I mean, because equality of opportunity, you know, women have made leaps and bounds and will continue to, minorities as well. And is it more that there's a sense among people? I mean, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent, but, you know, I get a sense that they're really uncomfortable with the idea of like, oh, if you say equality of opportunity or women can do this job, like they're going to roll their eyes. Like even the women who identify as Republican, is it a sensibility more than actual policies, or?
Well, I mean, I guess when I said equality of opportunity, I was still thinking about LGBT equality as well, because that's a key social issue that sort of is a litmus test for people. Mm-hmm. Like, are they?
Immigration.
And you know, I'm all for having an immigration policy that's comprehensive, but like, let's have low-skilled workers come. It's okay to have low-skilled workers come into the country and fill jobs. And that's not...
So how much longer are you going to be in the Republican
Party? So here's my... You know, I sort of evaluate this daily. I'm not one of these commentators that really likes to go do a victory lap and make a news cycle out of myself saying I'm leaving the Republican Party. I sort of consider myself an exile, right? Like, I don't understand the Republicans that I see in Congress now. I don't look up to them. I don't admire them. There's very few of them. There are a couple. I like Carlos Cabello a lot. I like Mike Kaufman. I think there are some that are trying to do the right thing and are trying to be courageous and stand up to Trump without completely you know, destroying themselves politically, but are authentically articulating the ideas that I believe in and that, by the way, need defending right now. And from exile, you can kind of tinker from the outside and hope that, you know, hope that the regime topples and that you can go back in and pick up the pieces and remake it. And I'm not confident that's what's going to happen. And so maybe, you know, maybe there is a third way eventually. I don't know what the vehicle or the vessel is. I'm not wedded to the success of the Republican Party at all costs. You know, it's I'm not that tribal. But there's a tradition there that was a vessel for really important ideas for a really long time, and that it may be over or it may not. But whether it is or isn't is going to have nothing to do with whether I am still identifying with the party or not.
We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Margaret Hoover. She is the host of the new reconstituted Firing Line. Thank you, Margaret, for talking to Reason.
Thanks, Nick.
For Reason, I'm Nick Gillespie.